Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, Noob of All Trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to Ready Player One, the novel by Ernest Cline. You can hear the bugs and the birds in the background because it's spring and I've got the window open. I try to cut the cars out, as you know, but I cannot get rid of the birds or the bugs because I don't have a soundproof booth. So hopefully you can hear me over the very annoying locust or cricket it sounds like out there. This is the penultimate episode. I just like using the word penultimate. And in this episode, I will be reading and reacting to chapters 34, 35, and 36. Chapter 34. Wade's avatar materializes in the Oasis, loaded for bear. Hold on a second. I'm going to try to shut the window just for recording because that cricket is making me grumpy. Okay, I closed the window, which removes some of the background noise, but it sounds like there's actually a cricket in this room, so hopefully you can't hear that in the background, but if you can, I am louder than it, and you hear me. So, he bypasses his X-Wing and the Vonnegut, both good ships, he says, in favor of another mode of transportation. He takes out the robot he got from passing the second gate. After doing some rudimentary research, he realizes that you activate the thing by simply stating its name. He does just that. Leopardon. The thing grows with the sound of rending metal to a height of 100 meters. He takes an elevator, starting in the left foot, up through the leg and torso, into the cockpit. No, not there. In the chest, silly. He puts on a voice command bracelet, pops AC/DC Dirty Deeds into the A-track, and shouts, "Change Marveler!" The robot morphs into a starship. He then takes the Stargate to Sector 10. Upon arriving, he both sees a massive amount of ships there and even more arriving in a steady stream. Even so, he realizes Artemis's warning that many might simply be there to watch them die in a blaze of non-glory is possibly true. Very probably, in fact. He thinks about her and meeting her finally after the fight. It strengthens his resolve. After morphing back to a robot, he needs to shut off his comms because so many looky-loos try to hail him and ask about the robot. As they go to Chthonia, the number of ships multiplies exponentially. When he lands outside of the castle, he simply can't believe how many have joined. Compares it to a starship Woodstock, parenthetically the cool one, not the lame 99 one. Although, I remember Alanis was there, and my wife and I have been kind of obsessed with Alanis again after seeing the play on Sunday. I heard her listening to it again when she was cleaning out the pool. Due to the density, the ship occasionally flew too close or got bumped into the shield and vaporized like a skeeter in a zapper. I think I say it, or I said it before, you know, Wade's kind of weak with the metaphors, but we'll give him a pass. Wade sees a clearing near the entrance to the castle. H, Artemis, and Choto all waiting in their giant robots. Wade lists their bots. You can look them up in the book or read it. And he has a bit of a trans moment with H. While he knows H is female, his avatar is male, so he uses that pronoun. See, folks? Not difficult. Wade makes an entrance by flying over the dome to join them. His adoring fans cheer his avatar's name. Artemis calls him out on showing off and says that travel is a bitch. H backs him up. Artemis concedes that it is a lot of fucking ships. They then turn their attention to the shield. H quotes Star Wars, and then in dramatic fashion, the doors to the castle open. Sorrento exits. I have a bad feeling about this. Artemis gets the Star Wars line. Sorrento gives them an unwelcoming speech. Bolstered by the security of the shield, he also shit-talks them. Wade quiets the masses with a gesture and assures Sorrento that they are coming. Sorrento scoffs and then shows off his own robot, Mechagodzilla. Other Sixers have Voltron and Robotech and Neon Genesis Evangelion bots. Some Gunters are taken aback and some turn tail and run. Wade checks the clock. 1 minute to go time. Go time. The Sixers erected a large armored bunker behind the castle. All kinds of weaponry and 30 supply droids. They all look like Johnny Five. Fuckers finally turned the poor bastard. At T-minus 1 minute, one of the droids, SD-03, powered up. It took the requisition from Wade, found the item, a soccer ball-sized octahedral device. It typed a set of commands into the device, picked it up, and took the antimatter friction induction bomb and rolled up a series of ramps. The droid made its way, possibly past confused Sixer guards, to the platform with the wizard and the orb. SD-03 executes the final set of commands and lifts the bomb above its head. Boom! Every living and non-living thing on the platform is vaporized. And the shield is down. Chapter 35. A flash with the explosion momentarily blinds everyone. When their vision clears, the shield is down, as I just said. Wade hopes that 10% of the Gunters join. To his surprise, nearly all of them do. Wade describes it as several beehives and wasp nests smashed together and then dropped on an anthill. This is where I say, clearly, metaphors are not his thing. Actually, it's a simile because he used like, right? The four of them hesitate for fear of accidentally killing their allies. Sorrento clearly cares nothing about that. He charges, destroying all in his path, friend and foe alike. The Gunters focus fire on the mechs. The Voltron boys go down before they get a chance to form. Sorrento, on the other hand, seems invulnerable to damage. Even as the four other mechs join the fight, only Artemis causes any damage. Sorrento fires back with a lightning breath attack. The four friends regroup and come up with an alternate plan. Wade will distract him, and the others will head for the castle. Shota puts the kibosh on that plan and acts as the diversion instead. He points out that the castle door is unmanned. Wade confirms that the Gunters overran the Sixers and broke the line. However, as the only ones with the key, they have exclusive access. They make a beeline, parenthetically. I've used that a couple of times. For the gate. Wade calls back to Shota. He stands firm to his role as diversion. Sorrento turns to protect the castle entrance. Wade again gives Shota a chance to join them. He simply replies that he has to administer payback to Sorrento. Shota wounds Sorrento's bot. Sorrento's breath attack recharges. Wade tries to warn Shota, but he can't hear him. The weapon hits him square in the back, and his name disappears from the scoreboard. Wade has no time to mourn, as the weapon then focuses on him, cutting the lower half clean off. He has the presence of mind to eject, parenthetically, as I'm shouting to him to eject, and the mech's pieces fall to the ground, killing several Gunters. Wade uses his jet boots to fall safely to the ground and clear the wreckage. He also uses them to scoot out of the way when Sorrento tries to stomp on him with Mechagodzilla's foot. H and Artemis get his attention on the comms. They're already in the castle. All he needs to do is get in there too, and they can open the gate. Instead, he turns back to face Sorrento. Holding the beta capsule over his head, he presses the activation button. Another flash of light and the sky turns crimson. He morphs into Ultraman. He has 3 minutes. A timer appears in the corner of his display, counting down. Below the timer, he sees the weapon choices written in Japanese. He selects Specium Ray. Holding his arms in a cross, a beam shoots and hits Sorrento in the chest, knocking him back. Sorrento loses his balance and falls on his side. Wade Mega jumps into the air, lands on Mechagodzilla, and hears something snap. Smoke emits from the mouth, then the light leaves its eyes. Wade backflips and lands behind the mech. He selects Ultra Slice. A circular saw made of blue energy appears in his right hand. He throws it at Sorrento, makes quick work of the bot, slicing it in half, and getting revenge. Sorrento tries to escape, but Wade uses the ray to blow up the retreating head. Celebrations, as Sorrento's name disappears from the scoreboard. He finished Sorrento with only 15 seconds left. He morphs back, powers the jet boots, and joins H and Artemis in the castle. H congratulates him, Artemis scolds him. They take out their keys. Before putting them in, Wade recites, quote-unquote, three is a magic number. The gate glows. They put in their keys, synchronize, and all turn at once. When they try to enter the gate, they hear a boom as if the universe cracked in half. And the chapter ends with, and then we all died. Chapter 36. Let me just tell you, even if I never planned to include this chapter in this episode, I would not have left on that cliffhanger. Let's go. Wade reminds, parenthetically, ? I feel like they told us this before. That you get a third-person view of your death. After the boom, an incinerating white light filled the world. Wade compares it to a nuclear blast. He sees their avatar skeletons suspended in the light, then his hit points went to zero. The blast wave comes next, disintegrating everything. The entire planet's surface is a barren, white land. Only the third gate remains. The Sixers detonated. The catalyst. Wade expects, quote-unquote, game over, and instead gets, quote, congratulations, you have an extra life. For a moment, he hangs in the air like Wile E. Coyote before falling to the ground. That costs him a third of his hit points. He wears the default outfit, even though his level and ability scores remain what they were before he died. Also, his entire inventory is gone, except for the perfect Pac-Man quarter. That quarter, after giving the life, is now just a quarter. Wade wonders how he will get to the gate, as it now floats 20 meters above him, because everything else was vaporized. Then, somehow, H's voice, unaltered and clear as day. Hal, even though they're all dead, Hog patched them into his audio feed. Wade explains the extra life quarter. H conveys that everyone else in the sector, over half the population of the Oasis, died in the catalyst detonation. However, 26ers still show on the scoreboard with a key. Wade needs to hustle. Wade breaks the news that he has no way to get to the gate. Then he sees something in the distance. He walks towards it and sees that it's the beta capsule. Because it killed everything, it didn't kill the gate, and it also didn't kill artifacts. When Shota suggests that he use it to reach the gate, Wade agrees. But it doesn't work. Only once per day. And he already used it to fight Sorrento. Wade asks if they carried any artifacts, parenthetically, since they are indestructible, that he can use to get to the gate. Neither H nor Shoto had anything helpful. Artemis mentions her quote-unquote chucks, Chuck Taylors, that grant speed and flight. During the search, he also finds H's sword and grabs it to give it back. After putting on the shoes, he runs towards the gate and takes flight. Before entering the gate, he promises to split the prize among them. They wonder why. He says simply that they all work together and he needs their help again. H and Soto immediately agree. Artemis wants to verify. Help and get a cut? Nope, Wade says. Get a cut either way. Artemis asks for a written contract. Wade responds with a recording on his channel. She assures him that she was joking. He responds with an, I knew that. Then he flew into the gate, vanishing into a whirlpool of stars. I will leave on that cliffhanger, though, because three more chapters, one more episode, and we're done. Then when I come back, I'll have to do the movie versus and the finale episode of this. But for now, here's my reaction. Okay, I looked back at my list of quote-unquote big topics I wanted to cover. I have AI, which does not match either this or the next set of chapters, quote-unquote hating what you loved, that I can probably work into the next episode, and quote-unquote cooperation. I went with quote-unquote discrimination last episode and promised cooperation in one of the final two. So it looks like cooperation wins this time. Hell, Klein even set me up at the end there again, with Wade's little speech and act of kindness. So let's talk about that character development for a little bit before I launch into my own commie manifesto. When asked what he planned to do with the money, Wade said he would build a spaceship with his friends and just get the hell away from Earth. Now, when actually faced with it, he wants it to share it with the others. Our little man is all grown up. Brings a tear to my eyes. I mean, I did just make the point in the capitalism episode. The single billion is 1,000 million, and we are talking about many billions again here. Sharing is not only the quote-unquote right thing to do, I think it's just the only logical thing. Honestly, what would you do with that much money? You couldn't spend it in 1,000 lifetimes. We call people who collect an quote-unquote abnormal amount of things hoarding, unless it's money. Then we call them geniuses or makers. Early in this book, I got the impression that Klein is none too impressed with our brand of hypercapitalism and individualism. It makes the villain of the story a large corporation. Moreover, the corporation initially presents as all capitalists do. Hey, we're just following the natural order of things. The golden rule. Those with gold make the rules. Tiny little joke for you there. But seriously, jealousy is a terrible thing and eats away at your soul. Don't you think we'd all be better off with a strong entity in charge of the Oasis? Small user fee to offset costs and upgrades. An advertising tier for those who can't afford the full experience. My goodness, I can see it already. Oasis 2.0, brought to you by IOA. You can trust us. We're all family here. I think I got off topic there. I started in a good place, and then just veered into general ANCAP territory. At this point, it's as necessary as breathing for me. Christine and I talked the other day because of Aiden's plan, parenthetically, or lack of one, concerns her. Well, I started on topic, but I ended up cursing billionaires once again. So it's not just you. I'm into this class war deep. Okay, focus. I just find it funny that most of our modern stories preach the importance of cooperation. The Empire in Star Wars, the Death Eaters in Harry Potter, the Phyrexians in Magic the Gathering, and countless others all rose to power through cooperation. Then, through the story, their individual natures win out, and they fracture. Meanwhile, the heroes go through the opposite realization. Until they figure out how to work together, the enemy continues to advance their plans, often nearly to the conclusion of their goals. Halliday, parenthetically, and ultimately Klein, I suppose, realizes this and intentionally throws a wrinkle into the Sixers' plans by requiring cooperation at the end. Klein even threw in a subtle dig at the religious right, parenthetically, at least that's how I interpreted it, with the Bible verse as a solution to their problem. They even got the damn verse wrong, which makes it a more perfect analogy of those hypocrites. But, as usual, it all took a little teamwork to make the dream work. While Sorrento made it his mission to eliminate the five, parenthetically four now, alone, they combined their forces and the full might of the Gunters working together to take him down and be the first ones into the gate. Hell, even after he nuked everything, it still took the four of them working together to get Wade into the gate. I just find it funny that some of our best and most successful, parenthetically, for the most part, endeavors in this country are socialists. I remember a Planet Money episode that talked about sports leagues being mostly socialist, parenthetically, seriously, and the benefits that they reap from their system of shared risk and reward. Might I also mention that all sports leagues have robust and powerful unions. Without the unions, I question if any of them have the foresight to install the programs and procedures that allow them to make money hand over fist for decades. Yet, in spite of all of this, individualism rules in this country. People regularly shun help, parenthetically, until they're desperate and think they have no other options, and rebrand their struggle as quote-unquote the grind. They say things like, quote, if travel was free, you'd never see me again, unquote, without realizing the inherent ironies of that statement. Travel is free. I've seen many wonderful things over the last couple of years right here in my backyard, and it cost me nothing more than some gas and a few hiking supplies. Secondly, the reason that they actually never get around to traveling is that they're always on that quote-unquote grind. Never mind what they're grinding, or for what reason. They're basically just selling all of their free time for minimum wage, and then turning their wages into wine or scratch tickets. Sorry, that sounded unnecessarily judgmental there. I understand we're all in this together. I've said it a couple of times myself. So, our favorite stories, parenthetically, forgot the biggest and probably best one of the last 5 years, the Avengers, all preach cooperation and collaboration. Our favorite sports never got popular enough to be businesses until they did the same. And yet, the myth of individualism as the norm and competition as weeding out the weak so that the strong survive still persists. I blame terrible science literacy and an intentional misinterpretation of Darwin and the quote-unquote alpha studies. I've talked about that before in the show. But as with most things, I am seeing a change thanks to the power of the internet to bring people together. The arc of history is long, but it bends to justice. Let's hope that's true. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles and a link to our socials, including our YouTube, where I'm doing a daily RPG calendar. I got behind again. I don't know why I say that. You probably just expect me to be behind at this point. But I did Monday and Tuesday today. I'm going to post Wednesday and Thursday tomorrow. Then I'll do the weekend over the weekend. And then I'll probably be so busy next week that I'll never even get around to it, because we are flying away on Tuesday to go to Germany. Can't wait. It's going to be such a fun trip. So I will have, as I've said previously, about 3 weeks to catch up on when we get back. I will be back with the final episode of this series sometime over the weekend, maybe on Monday. And then when I get back, I'll have some time to, I think I said I might do Ninja Turtles or something like that. I know I already wrote an article about Ninja Turtles, but I'll find something to do. I know I have to do the finale of this episode, and then I wanted to do the movie verses for the book as well. So I will see you again sometime over the weekend or Monday at the latest to finish up the series. Talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are Two Guys Gaming.